This meeting is called to order. Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll?
Vice Chair Rita Athus.
Present.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore. Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Present.
Board Chair Eric Watzowitz.
Here. This meeting is being conducted in person and through video conferencing communications pursuant to Public Act 101-0640, enacted June 12, 2020, and Section 7E of the Illinois Open Meetings Act, allowing for virtual board meetings during a disaster declaration relating to public health concerns. As Chair of the Board, I have determined that an in-person meeting is not practical or prudent because of the disaster. As such, trustees may attend today's meeting by audio and visual conferencing and not by physical presence. And we have Trustee Gales, you're out in virtual land here somewhere. So welcome aboard. Mr. Perry, would you please confirm that appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You do have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
May I have a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So moved, Barsima.
Any discussion? Hearing none, and we're going to be doing roll call votes here because we have people virtually. So the people that have been here in the past, we usually just say all in favor, but we're not going to do that because we have someone virtual. So Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus.
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore. Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watzowitz.
Yes. Now, may I have a motion to amend that motion in order to approve a consent agenda as follows. Action items 8A2 through 8A6.
So moved, Gales.
Second, Athus.
Is there any discussion? And again, these are items that we have talked through quite a bit in our last meeting, so that's why they're on the consent. With I don't hear any further discussion. Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus.
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore. Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watzowitz.
Yes. And may I make note that Trustee Moore, Tim Moore, has joined us. Hey, Tim, how you doing? May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of the Board of Trustees on November 10, 2022?
So moved, Pritchard.
We have a motion and we have a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus.
Abstain.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watzowitz.
Yes. So this is time for chair's comments. And just want to say that this is the end of another semester and we look forward to graduation and a new group of alums. Heard we had a great party last night, great holiday party last night in the city with our alums. So that's great. And we'll have a new group joining them. So congrats to our graduates and a big thank you to our hardworking teachers, professors, and staff. So I think a lot of you are in the room here today, so thank you. We'll also be voting on faculty tenure and faculty promotions today, which is always an exciting time for our faculty. We will also be going through the second reading of our bylaw changes. Most of our bylaws have been in place since 1996 and are just a little bit outdated. We are grateful for the work done by our trustees to get our bylaws up to date. Especially Trustee Athus and Trustee Butler. Thank you for all of your hard work, and we'll be voting on that later. Finally, we'll be voting on our 2023 goals that President Freeman and her team have put together for the university. They've done a lot of work in this area, and we're very appreciative of their efforts as well. At this time, I'd like to welcome any University Advisory Committee representatives present today. The current UAC representatives are Felicia Bohannon, Brad Kripe, Katie Jekyll, Ismail Montana, Holly Nicholson, and Karen Wedby. Do you have any comments?
Yes, we do. I'm Ismail Montana. On behalf of myself and my university advisory colleagues, I just would like to thank the board for considering the 2023 university goals of President Freeman. In the past 3 weeks, faculty and shared governance heard directly from President Freeman when she shared the draft of these goals with Faculty Senate. The Faculty Senate, in particular, the Social Justice Committee, is pleased to see the equity benchmark it has been endeavoring to implement, affirm in the 2023 university goals. And as we see the representation of faculty union here today, we look forward to working with university leadership to actualizing the equity benchmark affirmed in the 2023 university goals. Thank you. And I will pass the floor to any of my colleagues who have anything.
Thank you. Katie Jekyll, College of Education. I just want to thank everybody for being here today, and I want to note that I had opportunity to see President Freeman's goals and how excited we are to continue to this forward momentum. As I walked in today and saw the Voices of Belonging exhibit, that coupled with President Freeman's goals around equity, diversity, and belonging, as well as shared leadership and shared governance, how excited we are to work together, and I thank her and the board for considering those goals. We continue to be an exemplar in higher education and continue to be ahead of best practices and indeed engage in best practices. Thank you. And now, Holly Nicholson.
Thanks, Katie. President Freeman's advancement of shared leadership is visionary, and this is going to have a long-lasting impact on NIU's culture and leadership standards at all levels. As we embrace shared leadership as a mindset rather than specific projects or initiatives, we have the opportunity as individuals and leaders to spend some time reflecting on how we can infuse NIU's mission, values, and goals in our everyday lives. When leadership models these ideals and units translate them in a way that's relevant to their work, and all of us on the individual level live them out in the work we do and hold ourselves accountable to them, it will be transformative to NIU. We work better together, and there's no limit to our ability to impact our students, communities, nation, and world. To make this work, we should prepare to embrace change in the way we think and do our work and the standards we set for current and future leaders. And the shared equity leadership model will push us even closer to excellence. I applaud the specific actionable steps in the university goals to advance equity and belonging and the goals that are coming that will create a more sustainable campus. What I value most about working here is the continual encouragement and opportunities to think, learn, and do better. And I'm ready to be of service in whatever way I can, and staff as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your comments. And at this time, we recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely requests to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, we have one public comment this morning. Dr. Ferris, could you approach the podium?
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for recognizing my comment. Good morning, President Freeman. Good morning, board members. Good morning, NIU leaders. Good morning, NIU faculty and staff. My name is Carrie Ferris. I have been a member of the sociology department here since 2005. I'm speaking today on behalf of the United Faculty Alliance as the union's chapter president. If our members could stand and be recognized, I want to make sure we know how many people are here today. Thank you. We're here today because of our commitment to NIU. You can sit down if you want to, but you can stay standing if you want to, too. NIU faculty are committed to our students. We advance NIU's mission of excellence by teaching courses, supervising research, advising student organizations, supporting Husky teams, and mentoring those who are the future of the state of Illinois. We prepare our students for success, and we work with everyone who makes NIU's student body so vibrant and diverse. Our faculty are committed to our research and our artistry. The work we do in our labs, in the field, in archives, and in performance spaces enhances NIU's national and international reputation. Our members' work drives our many disciplines into the future. NIU faculty are committed to each other. We maintain NIU's tradition of shared governance through service to our departments and colleges and to the university as a whole. We volunteer both on and off campus, and we are the public face of NIU when we engage with the wider world. We've maintained our commitment to NIU in the wake of tragedy, through years without raises or state budgets, and through a multi-year pandemic. We've maintained our commitment as student needs, including their mental health needs, have increased, as administrative and assessment obligations have expanded, as staff positions and other support positions have gone unfilled, and as inflation has soared. We share with you the commitment to maintaining NIU's excellence and making public higher education accessible in our region. We're proud of the contributions that we make, and we need to know that those contributions are valued. But our current negotiations have given us reason to doubt that our commitment is valued by our employer. When a new assistant professor arrives on campus, that may be the last time their salary is competitive. The longer a faculty member commits to NIU, the less competitive our salaries become. Loyal faculty members provide the stability and continuity that are key to student success. But committing to NIU for the long term is financially, at least, a losing proposition. And while we're fond of saying that teaching is a labor of love, it is indeed labor, and it needs to be recognized and rewarded as such. The proposals put forward by your negotiating team haven't reflected that recognition and don't reward our commitment. Since July, your team has submitted and resubmitted the same counteroffer in response to our proposals, refusing to entertain mechanisms for increasing equity, such as minimum salaries at rank, and claiming that problems of compression and inversion were solved by the prior CBA. Last Thursday, we calculate that they added a meager $75,000 to their counteroffer, while we moved toward them by over $1 million. This was the first proposed increase in the university's financial package in almost 6 months of negotiation, and it was an affront to our members, only 19 of whom would see any impact from it. Frankly, we're surprised at this state of affairs because we know that President Freeman is committed to fairness, to equity, and to hiring, tenuring, promoting, and retaining a high-quality, diverse faculty. We hope that you, President Freeman and the board, will direct those who are bargaining on your behalf to present a salary counter that acknowledges and compensates faculty for our indispensable commitments of expertise, energy, effort, and enthusiasm to NIU. Can you make a commitment to the NIU faculty like the one that the Cook County Colleges have recently made? They just agreed to 20% across the board raises over 4 years plus longevity-based salary adjustments for their faculty, something that they shrewdly called faculty left behind adjustments. Many of our students transfer here from the community colleges in that district. Don't make them wonder why their NIU tuition and fee payments aren't properly supporting the faculty they came here to work with. Please send your representatives to the next bargaining session, that's 1 week from today, bearing a proposal that commits to fair and equitable treatment, competitive salaries and raises, and robust support of professional development. This is your opportunity to demonstrate your commitment to NIU with a fair contract that honors ours. Without a contract that recognizes and rewards our commitment, we can't do our work. Thanks for your time. We have some individual messages that we would like to deliver to President Freeman on the table in front of her there. Members, if you'd like to deliver your individual messages to President Freeman, you can just follow me on the way out here. Thank you.
So we'll get a little bit of order going here again. The reports of the board committees and board liaisons can be found under agenda item 7. Do any of the trustees have questions or comments regarding the written reports, items 7A through 7G? Any questions or comments on that? Hearing none, there's nothing to vote on there. Just wanted to see if anybody had any questions. I thought Sal was going to close. Sal is closing the door. Thank you, Sal. So if there aren't any other questions or comments from the board, Catherine Squires, Vice President for Advancement and President and CEO of the NIU Foundation, will provide a verbal report for item number 7H. Catherine.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Wozwitz and members of the Board of Trustees. Thank you for the opportunity to present an update from the NIU Foundation. It's a pleasure to do so in person today. I'm pleased to report that performance for the first 4 months of fiscal 23 is on pace with a total of $6.5 million raised, which is about 23% of our $28.5 million goal for the year. Through October, we were 100% ahead of where we were at this point last year, And our end-of-the-year pipeline is very strong. We're expecting to close our second quarter equally on pace. From the engagement perspective, over the past months, our engagement activities have been robust, complementing the busy football season with major hosted events coinciding with the Vanderbilt game in September, trips to Tulsa and Lexington, Kentucky, and a very full homecoming week. Events during homecoming that were new to the Alumni Association included a Golden Huskies reception, which celebrated the 50-year reunion of the class of 1972. The event was a wonderful success and will become an annual event going forward. Also new this year to the game day experience was what we called Missions Grove, our new tailgate experience, which happens just outside the BAVC. And this was a great partnership between the Alumni Association and NIU Athletics, and was a great success, especially during homecoming week, where we were able to add food truck options and additional tailgate areas to the footprint around Husky Stadium. As we reported at the September meeting, the campaign officially launched in its leadership phase on July 1st. Since that time, significant work has been done both internally on the development of our priorities, both at the university level and at the stakeholder and at the university level and collegiate division level, and on stakeholder training. Previously, we focused on our training for academic and university leadership, and over the past 4 months, we've shifted our focus to a broader capacity building set of activities, which includes the Campus Partners in Philanthropy, which is a series designed for faculty and staff who desire to become more knowledgeable about philanthropy at NIU, how to become engaged as a partner, and all about the campaign itself. Thus far, we've delivered three such sessions, including what we called the Campus Keynote, which was delivered by Dr. Alicia Shadiman, the director of the Center for Nonprofit and NGO Studies, who gave an incredible presentation entitled, What is a Culture of Philanthropy? These sessions have grown in popularity and will be integral as communication and engagement touch points throughout our campaign. In the spring, we'll turn our attention to launching the campaign cabinet, which is the official first step in the development of our campaign volunteer structure. With the guidance of our campaign counsel, Martin Lundy, we're continuing to refine our case for support based on conversations with donors and prospective donors. And over the past 4 months, we've worked to define our priorities in the context of campaign pillars, which are, to refresh your memory, broadening access and building equity, driving innovations and delivering solutions, and securing and sustaining key educational assets. To date, we've identified several university-level priorities that meet the criteria of being multi- or transdisciplinary, as well as transformational for NIU. And on a parallel track, the colleges and divisions have been working hard on their own specific priorities that align with these pillars. The priorities work will be completed by March 31st and will allow us to begin sharing the more complete case for support with donors and prospective donors, continuing to build interest and gain perspective, but importantly, soliciting key gifts. Regarding giving, I'd like to end my remarks today with some uplifting news regarding the status of our campaign to date. Part of developing our campaign plan is to develop the style and rubric of our campaign in terms of counting. The good news for us is that the campaign for NIU will be comprehensive in its structure, and that means that while we will have priorities and key focus areas, all giving to all areas of the university will count. And additionally, as you all know, not all contributions arrive in cash or even at the same time, even though we desperately wish that that would be different. I'm happy to announce, though, that at the end of October, we've raised $55 million raised that will apply towards our campaign total. And that number includes all of last year's philanthropy, fiscal 22, plus the total raised through a mini scholarship campaign that we began in fiscal 18, as well as the current fiscal year total to date, which I reported a second ago. As ever, fundraising at its best is both a long game as well as a team sport. And I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you as donors and leaders for this great university for your deep commitment and partnership. I believe, as you do, that all great things are ahead for NIU, and the reality of this campaign, as well as our ability to lift up our vision and priorities proudly for all of Husky Nation, is a thrilling moment for all of us. I am personally full of pride and optimism regarding this effort. We have the leadership, we have the team, and above all, we have a tremendous story to tell about the future of our beloved university at an important moment. Thank you for the opportunity to update you in person, and I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Catherine, I'm just kind of curious, I mean, what's your view? Obviously, anybody that reads a newspaper or, well, we don't have newspapers anymore, but
especially not today.
We'll see that the economy is taking a turn. Are we seeing that all right now from a philanthropic standpoint, where we're seeing issues with money coming in?
So there are really two things happening. And I'll start by saying that over the past 20 years, despite best efforts, the trend in philanthropy is seeing less donors to institutions. So the trend in terms of the numbers of donors has steadily declined, which puts pressure on those who are our donors to give more. And in fact, at NIU, we're actually seeing that. So the dollars per donor at NIU remain strong. So our giving has risen, even though the number of donors giving has lessened. So in a situation like this economically, we are actually asking, we're putting more pressure on fewer donors to do more. The good news is we have an incredible baby boomer segment, and the baby boomers are giving with their deferred assets. They're not giving out of cash. And so I think sometimes inflation, which affects people's confidence to give out of their pocketbook, is offset a little bit by some of our demographics, which allow some of our older donors to think a little bit more about deferred giving, about their estate plans. We have not seen a decline right yet. I'm going to knock on wood. We are not hearing from our donors that there's stress and strain that's unreasonable to the extent that they're asking us to consider maybe we can make this gift at another time. If anything, we're hearing them think about their palette of assets a little bit differently and talking about how to make a similar commitment or sometimes even an extended commitment just with different types of assets. So the compression and the inflation is causing, you know, is real. We're seeing people with some anxiety, but it's not necessarily translating yet into their ability and confidence in giving. I'm worrying about the purchase power of those dollars in an organization where everything is costing us more. You mentioned earlier the wonderful holiday party last night in the city, and just the cost of buses alone, which is a very important part of our stewardship, to pick up some incredible donors in DeKalb and stop in Naperville. The cost of that event has gone up astronomically due to all of the issues that we all are aware of. So how we function with the compressed purchasing power of gifted dollars is probably as much of a challenge, if not more so now. So talking to colleagues around the state, we're not hearing anything different than what I've just said we're experiencing here. Everybody's focusing on communication. How do we make the case for our donors that we need to, you know, folks to dig a little deeper because times are tough, and really just doing good stewardship. That's the bottom line. I've wondered how the economy would affect campaigns, but right now we're not hearing any signals from our colleagues in other places that they're trying to hurry and finish a campaign, or that they're delaying the start of a campaign, or that they're worrying about finishing on time or on pace. So, you know, maybe we don't have all the information we need to fully predict what might or might not happen, but I've been doing this a while, and there's always going to be something. This is not the first time we've had economic constraint like this, and I think it's forward together forward. We just have to push on. So.
Thank you, Catherine. Always great seeing you. I have two questions for you. One, and you can answer this any way you choose, but percentage-wise, where are you staffing that you need, you know, for the campaign? Are you 100% staff, 75% staff? So, and maybe, you know, a few comments on where your greatest needs are. And then second, you mentioned something, you know, about the number of alums that are participating from a philanthropic standpoint might have declined slightly, which is not great news, but of the 100 or north of 150,000 alums here in Chicago and a quarter of a billion, a quarter of a million from a national standpoint, how are we reaching these alums? What things are you doing, you and the foundation doing, and the Alumni Association doing, and what new things are on the horizon in terms of how we plan to engage more alumni?
So it's first of all, I'll start at the highest level. I mean, this is a problem for every university, and if we look at the universities who are knocking it out of the ballpark in terms of engaged donors who also give, it's always a single digit, and that just feels horribly bad and wrong. The numbers nationally are 3 to 5% of a base being engaged, and I can't tell you how frustrating it is to even admit that, because we believe we can do so much better. It's really about engagement. Engagement leads to resources, and if we don't have a viable communication strategy and an engagement plan, we can do all the fabulous asking in the world, but there's no context for why someone might do something extraordinary. So we really have, frankly, since we've merged between the Alumni Association and the Foundation, now we're one entity, and we're a lot more integrated in terms of our communication, focusing much more on engagement than just asking for gifts the very first time we've gotten to know someone. So we've made significant investments in our team. We are using some outside consultants to help inform our strategies in terms of not only how we communicate from a messaging perspective, but what are the tools that we don't have today that would help us. We're much more invested in this platform called Overture, which you all as trustees experienced when you read the case for support. This is an engaging tool that will allow us to put messages out to large numbers of people, but also get their feedback immediately, analytically, to see how they're feeling, what they're looking at, how many clicks are going to various parts of the microsites, but also be able to individually tailor messages, which is, the world has always been about mass communications at the lowest possible cost. We don't think that's necessarily the right strategy for NIU. We're not going to neglect that, but we need to make personalized communication and really make direct appeals for people to become engaged. And so I would say the short answer is we're engaged in upscaling our tools and our people and our resources, intellectual resources, to understand the best techniques out there in terms of communication, always with an eye towards being the most personal we can be. So your other question related to staffing. So, we don't like that this might be a 10-year campaign. It's certainly going to be an 8-year campaign. And there are different schools of thought in terms of how you get ready from a staffing perspective. We've taken the approach that this will be phased. I have a great team right now. My focus is on keeping the great people that I have, because there's a lot that's powerful and positive about people who want to be here, who have been here, and have that institutional knowledge. And I think the numbers are starting to show that people we invested into 3 years ago are really hitting their stride. But I don't expect that we would hire everybody we need year one. So we have a phased plan that allows us to kind of roll our hires over the next 2 or 3 years with a goal of being public in fiscal 25 or calendar 25. I can't remember off the top of my head my own timeline. But we'll have a full campaign staffing at that point. And if we do it right and we continue to have success, by the time we emerge from the campaign, that might likely be our structure. I don't envision hiring people that are just campaign specific and then letting them go at the end of the campaign. I think we're building to a new level, and I want to be thoughtful and mindful and smart about how we bring those folks on and over what time period. So my biggest gap, we always need great fundraisers. But I think as we grow, we want to make sure that we're supporting our operations infrastructure at the same pace. I always like to use the gift officers, who are the unheralded, unsung heroes of our business, because nothing's a gift until a gift officer who sits in the very back cubicle in the back of the back office says it's a gift. And so we need people who are making sure the gifts are entered, that they're entered correctly, that the acknowledgments are going out on time. And for every 2 or 3 gift officers you bring on board, if they're doing their job right, they're creating a lot of work for that back office, and so we're mindful that our administrative operations, our development operations, are going to need to continue to grow as our external fundraising staff grows. And I think right now it's a little weighted on, I might need a couple of ops people to make sure that we're not upsetting the apple cart. But some good news on that front. I know hiring has always been a tough topic to talk about these days for reasons of the environment and other things, but we just recently made a hire for a new gift, a BAA, which is a person who will work in the back office, and he lives in DeKalb. He used to work at another university, but during the pandemic, he wanted to get out of the city, moved to DeKalb, and when they called him back to work and said, you have to come in person, he said, I don't want to do that anymore. So he raised his hand and said, I'm kind of sitting here right here in DeKalb, and do you have anything open? And he was the perfect fit for our team, and he can walk to work. So some of it's luck, but that's exactly the kind of position that we really need right now. So thank you for the question.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay, Catherine, thank you very much.
My
appreciate
pleasure.
Your hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a joy.
So we will now move to the President's Report, number 165. Which, by the way, do we know how we come up with the numbering of the items? I've thought about this before. Is that just the number of meetings since 18-something or something like that? So what do you think, Matt?
Matt is nodding. It's a simple numeric calculation of how many meetings we've had, and that's the number on the meeting. Since we had our own board, it was not 18.
Like 1996, which will tie right back into our bylaws today, because that was the last time we updated them.
I'm glad we didn't have to call Dr. Kaplan back for a historical analysis. That Matt knew the answer to that. So
yes, I would have that. So anyway, President's Report number 165. President Freeman, will you please present the report?
Thank you, Trustee Wasowicz, Chair Wasowicz. The first agenda item, 8A1, is a recommendation for faculty tenure and or promotion effective 2022-23. Andrew Nopart was hired at the rank of associate professor with tenure to direct graduate programs in interdisciplinary health professions, and the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee recommends the board approve this request for a recommendation for faculty tenure and promotion.
May I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Gales.
Thank you, Montel.
Second, Barsema.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we will call the question. Ms. Doyle, would you please take the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsema?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero. Trustee Tim Moore.
I abstain.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watsowicz.
Yes. President Freeman.
Okay.
By the way, you can tell a lot about a person when you hear their ringtone like that. So, but go ahead, continue.
All right, the following items have been moved to consent agenda. Agenda item 8A2, U.S. Geological Survey Research Partnership Renovation Project. Agenda item 8A3, Laredo Taft Campus Wastewater Treatment Plant Replacement. Agenda item 8A4, Recreation Center Locker Changing Rooms Remodel Capital Project Construction Approval. Agenda item 8A5, Jordan Center Room 125, Northwestern Medicine Performance Center Flooring Replacement. Agenda item 8A6, DeKalb Campus Summer 2023 Roof Repairs Capital Project Approval.
May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda items as read by President Freeman?
So moved, Athus.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll call the question. Ms. Doyle, would you please take the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsema?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard? Board Chair Eric Watsowicz?
Yes.
Information items 8B1 through 8B14 were discussed at the November 10, 2022 committee meetings. Is there interest from our board members in revisiting any of these forwarded information items that were discussed previously? Seeing none, we'll move to items directly from the president. Agenda items 8C1 through 8C6 are being presented to the board directly from the president and have not been previously considered by the Board of Trustees. Members of our university leadership team look forward to answering any questions and addressing any concerns regarding these items. So we will start with agenda item 8C1, which is our 2023 university goals. And in introduction of this item, I want to say that I'm very, very proud of this item and the work that our entire university community has done to get us to this point. When I became president in 2018, I talked about how pleased and honored I was to be able to articulate a shared agenda for this university's future based on being here and understanding what our faculty, students, and staff cared about. And at that point, in collaboration with the Board of Trustees, we decided that the best way to capture that agenda was to recast our mission, vision, and core values to reflect what our university really stood for and cared about, to create a strategic action planning framework with six themes that held constant what we would be working on for the foreseeable future, and within that framework to set annual goals that we revisited annually for progress. So we chose very intentionally not to have a large strategic planning document that got printed and sat on a shelf, but to rather talk annually about where we were heading, how much progress we made, and what we needed to do similarly or differently. And this year, I think it is so clear in these university goals that that process has worked and continues to work. I want to thank the University Advisory Committee for their really kind and supportive comments. We would not have these university goals without the support of shared governance. And I think you can see that in the way we execute on our strategic enrollment management plan. You can see the dynamic nature of our model in the way we were revisited that plan early because of the impacts of COVID on our students. I look at the first goal, which is all about shared leadership. And I think that this is an approach that the campus has embraced because it's the way that things have always worked best for us. And now we have a way to be intentional about bringing that forward to build capacity and frame our professional development for staff in particular around that. And then, you know, I just want to make the point that when you do things with intention, and you revisit them, and you work hard at making progress, it really delivers results. And I hope that everyone who walked in to this room today walked through our belonging exhibit that we co-created with the community to talk about our larger community commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Inclusive excellence. On our back table, we have framed the HEED Awards, the Higher Education Diversity Awards, that in Excellence in Diversity Awards that we have received for two consecutive years. These are awards that reflect a large reflective document that we need to put together to show that we're not sitting on our laurels, that we're continuing to work, and we're continuing to work on the hard stuff. And I'm very, very proud of those awards. And I think you can see our commitment to continuing to push the envelope on diversity, equity, inclusion, social justice, and belonging, not just under theme four, but throughout our goals. I very much appreciate the work that University Council and Faculty Senate have done to talk about the things that we need to do to keep our campus moving forward for the sake of our employees and our students. And it's just with great pleasure that I present these goals. I just want to say that, you know, Catherine talked about a campaign pillar related to the long-term sustainability of our university. And I think that's something on everybody's minds. We know that we need to generate revenue. We need to invest in things that matter. We need to be ruthless in our prioritization to go forward. We heard this from a shared leadership group that reflected feedback from across the campus. And I'm proud of the fact that the recommendations that group put together are pretty much verbatim put into the university goals for us to move forward together as a campus. So it is with great respect for the university community and gratitude for their efforts to help all of us move NIU forward that the university requests Board of Trustees approval for the 2023 university goals, and with that, a plan for the board to evaluate my performance against these goals weighted as follows: empowerment and shared responsibility, 10%, student recruitment, student success, and student experience, 20%, academic excellence and curriculum innovation, 15%, diversity, equity, and inclusion, 15%, research, scholarship, artistry, and engagement, 20%, resource development and fiscal responsibility, 20%.
May I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Athis.
Second, Marcy. So we have a motion, we have a second. Is there a discussion? Dennis?
Well, first of all, I would thank Dr. Freeman, members of your leadership team and your staff, and members of the UAC and all others who contributed to this, to echo the words of Dr. Freeman, this is, I think a really great plan that we have for the coming year that we're currently in for us. I also like to thank members of the Board of Trustees who participated in the review and the final product that you see before you. A lot of work goes into it, but I think a lot of good things come out of it with the work that went in. So thank you very much.
Any other comments, thoughts? Rita?
I'd like to echo what Trustee Barsima said, but also one of the things going through this process that really hit me was how everything is so seamlessly coordinated from the standpoint that the goals are in line with the strategic plan and the trustees have made a decision to align those with our committee structure. And I think besides the goals being very good and very well articulated, the fact that we've put together an organizational process that makes sure that those follow through, I was really impressed with that and appreciate all the work that's been done.
Anyone else? Bob?
I think we can all be very thankful for the president, the leadership team, for bringing together these types of goals and measurable progress towards those goals. I would just like to pick up on a comment that Catherine made about the importance of communication. And I think while we have a document that the campus feels good about, we need to communicate that to the larger community that NIU serves, so that people realize that we have a university that's addressing issues, that's looking at the long-term purpose for the university, and that we're making progress and success. So I would just add that that's not part of the goals, but I think communication is going to be an important way of making these goals real for our larger community. Thank you.
Anyone else? I have one final comment. Obviously, we've all been very involved with this, and for my day job, I do this for private companies and their leadership teams, and I realize doing this in a higher education environment with shared leadership, it's a lot to pull together and try to get as many different viewpoints in to give us a vision for the future. So this is a lot of work that's been put into this, and now you know, it's all about execution. So we can have the best plan in the world, but now we got to execute. So we look forward to helping with that execution. And I think throughout the year, you'll see our board committees keeping an eye on some of these. But our job is to have our eyes in and our fingers out. It's your team, and it's your job to execute. And we look forward to helping advise, and again, to have our eyes in. So with that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make one more comment, and that would be to thank the chairman for his leadership with the board. I know at times he would like to say herding cats, but he did a very good job of keeping us on schedule and making sure that this was done in a comprehensive and well-done manner. So I'd like to thank the chairman for his leadership.
I always get embarrassed about stuff like that. So, okay, thank you. Like my wife always says, just say thank you. Will you? So, all right, well, thank you for that. And with that, we will call the questions. So Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watsowitz?
Yes. President Freeman, to the floor again.
Thank you. Agenda item 8C2 is an honorary doctorate recommendation. The Honorary Degree Committee has recommended that Her Royal Highness Princess Mangu Kabumi, Princess Gusti Kaneng Ratu Mangu Bumi, be awarded an honorary doctorate in humane letters. The princess has distinguished herself as a leading proponent of inclusive education, of social mobility causes, and as the custodian of Javanese culture. She has also emerged as a national feminist icon who openly and actively advocates for equity. The princess also possesses a forward-looking vision about the balance of custom and tradition with progress and modernization. She spends time as a cultural ambassador for Indonesia and the palace, touring with performing groups as a living embodiment of cultural heritage. Princess Mangu Bumi is clearly deserving of this high distinction. Bringing her into the NIU family would be another wonderful linkage with our impressive alumni and network in Indonesia and Southeast Asia. And so for these reasons, the university recommends Board of Trustees approval of the recommendation to award an honorary doctorate in humane letters to Her Royal Highness Princess Gusti Kanjeng Ratu Mangu Bumi.
May I have a motion?
So move, Pritchard.
Second, Butler.
We have a motion, we have a second. Any discussion?
I just want to point out this is the second royal princess that we are awarding an honorary doctorate to, having previously done Her Royal Highness from Thailand. So.
And with having a last name like Wazowitz, it's constantly mispronounced. Very good job at pronouncing her name. Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll call the question. Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watsowitz?
Yes.
Agenda item 8C3 is the appointment of Interim Executive Vice President and Provost. Dr. Lori Ellis Piper is being recommended for appointment as the Interim Executive Vice President and Provost effective July 1, 2023. The appointment is required as NIU's current Executive Vice President and Provost will be serving NIU through June 30th, 2023, and then stepping down from that role. Dr. Ellis Piper's commitment to NIU's mission, vision, and values is unquestionable. She has significant academic leadership experience, including in-depth knowledge of NIU's institutional culture, policies and procedures, and shared governance, leadership and management experience, including oversight of budgets and personnel in an academic department, interdisciplinary center, and at the college level. She's established herself with a reputation for fairness and transparency, has an unassailable track record of using data to inform decisions and is able to communicate effectively with multiple internal and external stakeholders, including our state and federal legislators. Dr. Elish-Piper has been at NIU for more than 25 years and understands who we are and where we're going. And on that basis, the university requests the Board of Trustees approves the appointment of Dr. Lori Elish-Piper as Interim Executive Vice President and Provost effective July 1, 2023.
May I have a motion to approve?
So move, Pritchard.
Second, Gales.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Yes.
This is a delicate question. I'm wondering if she's adequately prepared someone to succeed her during this time that she's serving as acting provost.
What I can say is I think that Dr. Elish-Piper has built a culture of professional development in her college so that when we run a competitive internal search for interim leadership in the college, we are likely to have multiple well-prepared candidates competing for that position. That will be a search that Provost Ingram and Dean Elish-Piper consult on together to execute. But it will be a competitive search with the current provost making the decision.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero, Trustee Tim Moore.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watzwitz.
Yes.
Agenda item 8C4 is the appointment of Vice President for Outreach, Engagement, and Regional Development. And in this case, we are not making a change in the university's chief engagement officer, but merely recognizing appropriately engagement as the third pillar of our mission with the title of vice president for our current chief engagement officer, and all vice presidential appointments require board approval. NIU really embraces engagement as the third pillar of our university's mission. We are very proud of the distinction by the Carnegie Foundation as a Carnegie Community Engaged University, by the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities as an Innovation and Economic Prosperity University. Our continued success in these areas equates to strong leadership in that division. Dr. Rena Kachonis was named the Chief Engagement Officer in 2020 with the title of Senior Associate Vice President. And as the leader of the division, OERD, as we affectionately call it, she has been intentional about centering OERD within our university and aligning the work of that division tightly with NIU's mission, vision, and values. I will say that more than ever, faculty, staff, and students are benefiting from leadership, from partnership, and support of OERD. We are seeing NIU students engaged in inclusive communities fostered by esports and by STEM outreach. Our faculty and staff are more involved in OERD planning activities through task force participation and joint appointments with academic departments, and our entire university is benefiting from the success of the strategic development team, prompting innovation, attracting new partnerships, and growing new revenue. I also want to point out that I just said that Dr. Kachonis took leadership of the division in 2020, and to say that that was a dynamic operating environment is probably an understatement given that that was just as we entered a global pandemic. And I really credit with Dr. Kachonis with approaching the pandemic as an opportunity to streamline, innovate, and sharpen the focus of OERD. She demonstrated leadership by reallocating resources to impact and creating new ways to collaborate with the communities that we serve, and her leadership has been key to the post-pandemic response and recovery of OERD units and functions. It's to her credit that NIU's commitment to lifelong engagement is respected across our state and across our nation for driving impact through engagement, through connections, collaboration, and creating solutions. Some may ask why we're choosing to do this now, and you know, I think we all know that Dr. Blasey is retiring in the end of June, and we're going to begin searching for a new vice president for research and innovation partnerships. You just heard that we are having a transition at the level of executive vice president and provost, and I felt it was really important at this moment to make sure that everyone on campus and everyone who joins our campus recognizes that engagement is a mission pillar equal to the others of teaching, learning, research, artistry, and research and artistry. So with that, the university recommends that in recognition of her leadership responsibilities and achievements as NIU's chief engagement officer, as well as her impact and success, the university recommends appointment of Dr. Rena Kachonis with a new title, Vice President for Outreach Engagement and Regional Development and Chief Engagement Officer, effective January 1st of 2023.
May I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and we have a second. Discussion. Any discussion? John.
Rena, I just want to say congratulations. I think this is a well-deserved honor and role for you, and I've enjoyed working with you for the entire time that I've been on the board. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do with this role and with OERD.
Yes. Trustee Bersima.
I also have had the honor of working with you for a number of years, and we've done some good things. So this is well deserved. Beyond that, though, I just want to bring attention to, you know, Dr. Elish Piper, Dr. Katsonis, our esteemed leadership at that table, the esteemed leadership in this room and outside of this room. We have great leaders on this campus, and it is an honor and a pleasure to sit up here as a trustee and just recognize the leadership that this campus has. And, you know, as we always say in the business world, you need to be solving a great problem that needs to be solved. You need to solve it with a great product, and you need great leaders. And I think we do all three of those really, really well. So just want to say congratulations on building a great leadership team, Dr. Freeman.
Any other comments?
You know, I want to just say thank you to Trustee Bersima and say that let's just say over the course of this football season, we heard a lot about next man up. And it gives me great joy and pride to recognize myself and to have our trustees recognize that we are able to replace great leadership like Provost Ingram's with great interim leadership, as we expect from Dr. Elish Piper, and that the next man up is not a problem for the university's leadership team.
Or a next woman up. So. Anyway, with that said, and I definitely agree with all of the comments, if there is no other discussion, we will call the question. Ms. Doyle?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Bersima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Wadsworth?
Yes.
Agenda item 8C5 is Women's Volleyball Head Coach Search Update. At the December 5th, 2019 meeting of this Board of Trustees, the Board authorized the President to select executive search firms for head coaches in the Division of Athletics, with the recommendation and understanding that the President periodically report back to the Board regarding selection and status of such searches. Due to the recent separation of the women's volleyball head coach, the Division of Athletics will be utilizing an executive search firm per the prior approval of the board, as noted. The search firm will offer our university the ability to assist in identifying and recruiting diverse candidates, as well as conducting in-depth research and background checks on potential candidates for head coaches women's volleyball position. The latitude granted by the board through delegation to the president has allowed this search to occur on a timely and appropriate timeline to get the best possible leadership for volleyball, and we look forward to keeping you posted as the search progresses. That was an information item, so I can now proceed to our next information item, agenda item 8C6, which is a report by Dean Paul Castle on what's going on in our College of Visual and Performing Arts.
Can we have the slide presentation up, please? Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about the great work of the College of Visual and Performing Arts. Next slide, please. There it is. So I wanted to, we're very proud of our work and how it aligns so strongly with the university mission, vision, and values, and our own strategic plan, particularly with two of the goals the president has articulated and you have just approved: student recruitment, success and experience, and supporting transdisciplinary work. Next slide. The following is evidence of our effectiveness in fulfilling the vision, our plan, and those goals. So you can see here, this is a strategic plan we adopted in 2020, and we have I can get into a number of specifics later if you'd like, but these are derived actually out of the mission, vision, and values of the university, and we've talked a lot today about alignment and collaboration. And the entire faculty and staff and students of the college worked to derive these goals, and we're very proud about the progress we're making so far. Next slide, please. We're going to start with a few numbers. Enrollment and intention. Next slide. So I'm very proud to show that we have, after a dip in 2017, probably a result of some of the financial situations here at the university in Illinois, we were able to bring our enrollment back up, and we have stabilized. Last year, we had a banner year in the School of Art and Design in terms of recruitment. And next slide, please, and retention. And you can see our retention numbers from this slide are fairly strong. We're maintaining our level, and it is a very high level, and we're very, very proud of that fact. We believe that much of this retention can be attributed to the highly experiential nature of our programs: hands-on, high impact, with strong cohort identities, close mentoring with faculty, and a special attention to wellness. Our students put a lot on the line, intellectually, imaginatively, physically, and emotionally. The bonds forged in the study of the practice of the arts are strong and lasting, and we believe the evidence shows that. Next slide, please. We also want to note that our students are retained and complete and are diverse in culture and identity and socially and economically. We are, in fact, training and educating the next generation of artists, scholars, and teachers who shall literally change the face of the profession and the academy. This is a direct expression of the success of our third and perhaps most important goal in our strategic plan. And now, all the world is on our stages. Next slide, please. Following are some examples of the success and effectiveness of our students, faculty, and our programs in bringing the world to our stages and our stages to the world. And let's start with a world record. Next slide, please. Last spring, we made the largest paper snowflake in the world, and it is now embossed in the Guinness Book of World Records. Now, yes, it's funny, but it's also amazing. And I also want to say this. This is a gross out of the photography professor, Jessica Labatt, who is instrumental in the Faces of Belonging that we're incredibly proud of, that was a result of the work that this college did in partnership with the Academic Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Office. Anyway, her photographers, students got together, and the entire town got involved. Mayor Barnes was actually one of the adjudicators to make sure that we did everything according to Hoyle, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. So that's really, really big. The next biggest one was like only maybe 12 feet, and some woman in Iowa did it. But we're really proud that our team did this. It took a long time. And I also was pleased that we had the cooperation of the Convocation Center and a number of partners. partners across DeKalb. That's just a great example of how the college is engaged with the community, with the wider world, and also with an extremely excellent student learning outcome. It does it all. Next slide, please. Another world action was a world premiere, the long-awaited performance of a composition by Professor David Mackey of the School of Music and by our own Avalon String Quartet, based on the famous Seven Ages of Man speech from Shakespeare's As You Like It. Text spoken, by the way, by a professional actor from St. Charles and yours truly. And I also want to say this was supported by the 125th Anniversary Committee and Stacey Barsima, who was instrumental in helping us fund this great commission. Next slide, please. So we're going to look at some of the efforts of the schools. So I want to first say, this is a School of Art and Design contributions. In the corner there, you see Angela Redman, a recent MFA graduate who, among other things, won first place at the Museum of Science and Industry's Black Creativity Exhibition. Pretty cool. She's a working professional artist, and we're very, very proud of her. On the top slide, in the top left corner, you can see an exhibit. Our program in the school recently went through reaccreditation, and the site visitors who came by said, and this is a direct quote, they've never seen such an extremely, I'm not getting it quite right, but it was the best exhibit of student work they've ever seen. Direct quote, ever seen. Our students, very proud. In the middle there, you can see an exhibit. This is from two graduate students curated this exhibit. They brought in two guest artists, printmakers, using some of the art and culture fee money to bring them to campus to workshop with our students. And this exhibit was so well noted that Murray State has asked to take it on themselves. And so recently, our gallery coordinator, Peter Van Ale, schlepped down to Murray State and set up this exhibit. And then just to show our engagement with the university, that is a sculpture by our sculpture professor, Mike Ray. It is in the Home Student Center right now. He also has a giant wooden robot in Wirtz Hall. And this is just an example of how our faculty are integrated with the work of the university. Next slide, please. The School of Theater and Dance had a great season and has a great season so far. Some of you may have seen Much Ado About Nothing recently. But through the Art and Culture Fee, we're able to bring in a number of guest artists, directors, designers of a diverse nature, and two are featured here. This is a new play written by Ike Holder and directed by Erica Ratcliffe, a Chicago professional director. This play was Hit the Wall, which is about the Stonewall Uprising that started the gay liberation movement back in the late 60s. So not only are we bringing in guest artists of a diverse nature, we're also working on plays that are inclusive of the entire community here on campus. Next slide. The dance program just presented a full-length dance to Carmina Burana, choreographed by Paula Fraz, a retiring professor, as her swan song, with some of the costumes made by the late Melanie Parks, who was associate dean when I first arrived and a costume professor. We celebrated her memory, and we raised money for a scholarship in costume design in Melanie's name. I'm very glad. We also a number of former faculty and students came by and supported Melanie, and we're very sorry to lose her, but her contributions live on. Next slide, please. At the museum, we recently did an exhibit, the James Ransom exhibit, which included a short residency by Mr. Ransom and his partner, author Lisa Klein Ransom, a wonderful exhibit that included partnerships with local libraries and elementary schools. Next slide, please. And then we have our Community School of the Arts. We're always very proud of that. This past summer, we were able to return at long last to in-person camps. And we had and registration for the next summer camps is open, by the way, and those of you who are looking for enhancements for your children. Next slide, please. Aligning with the university goal and the college strategic plan to develop transdisciplinary curriculum, here are two examples we are offering this spring. First, a course in dance entrepreneurship developed by visiting assistant professor Sarita Smith-Childs Connolly, who is not only a professional dancer, choreographer, and teacher, but she also worked as a vice president in wealth management for several major banks. She's an amazing find. We're super proud of her, and we're looking forward to her working with us closely. You'll see some of her work in next spring's dance concert as well. Next slide. And second, this is a course that was a result of a competitive process I established a couple years ago to fund transdisciplinary courses and collaborations with faculty from each of the schools. So these are members at Gibson Chima, Mark Makaranis, Amanda Van Volkenberg, and Ben Penkrod. Across all schools are represented in this transdisciplinary performance practices. We're very, very proud of that, and we're continuing to fund those kind of activities. Now I'd like to highlight a few of our faculty accomplishments. Next slide. First, we have Chrissy Stakatis, who published a major study on Indigenous art mentoring and was elected as a Distinguished Fellow of the National Association of Art Educators. Next slide, please. And we have Bobby Broom, a recently tenured professor of jazz guitar. He was featured in a 5-minute profile on Chicago's very own on WGN-TV last month, and he just released a CD. It's really, really good. And we'll talk more about how great our jazz program is in just a minute. Next slide, please. Sahin Sahinoglu is on the set there. He designed for America's Thursday Night Football. This is pretty cool. Next slide, please. And finally, I wanted to note our new hire for the year, Dr. Wilbur Lin, director of orchestras, who has hit the ground running with our Philharmonic and was recently appointed the music director of the Missouri Symphony Orchestra in Columbia, Missouri. A great, great hire. And now, coming soon to a theater or concert or exhibit hall near you. Next slide, please. Roll on. So I mentioned earlier the art and culture fee, and one of the things we were able to do this past spring, past fall, was bring in the 1619 project, A Journey of the People, which was performed at the Egyptian Theater, and it involved almost everybody on campus. It was a great event, really stirring. Community members were involved. Members of the City of DeKalb Belonging Committee were there, and it was just. And he also, the creator, Ted Williams III, also did a presentation for our college students in the Botel Concert Hall. Very inspiring speeches. We're hoping, and we're negotiating now, to bring in some comedians. I can't say more than that, but they're pretty high profile folks, and I'm in negotiation with the agent right now, and hopefully that will happen in early February. Yes. So I can't say anything more than that because I don't want to spoil the negotiations. But we're very, very proud. They might be involved in a very long-running and famous sketch comedy show. Maybe. Next slide, please. Finally, we're really proud of this amazing achievement. If you don't know, our jazz orchestra has been invited. One of 10 in the entire country to participate in the Rudin Jazz Championship. They were invited by Wynton Marsalis himself. Yes, indeed, Wynton Marsalis, if you don't know who he is, a legendary jazz and classical trumpeter, and also a friend of Reggie Thomas, who runs our jazz program. Our jazz orchestra has been invited, and they'll be performing and competing. This is literally the college football playoffs of jazz orchestras. And a small but merry band of us were planning to attend in New York and see them play and hobnob with Wynton, perhaps, at a Saturday night event. That's on January 15th and 16th, and we hope if you have you want to make some plans, come and join us at this tremendous accomplishment and achievement, and hopefully we'll win. Though I'm less sanguine about competition amongst the arts. When art is done well, everybody wins. Next slide, please. Finally, I wanted to draw your attention to the 50th anniversary of the Steel Pan Program. The 50th. Started a long time ago by a number of our music faculty, and of course, Liam Teague, who is a Board of Trustees professor. The concert's on April 16th. We're doing a lot of planning, including engaging with the country of Trinidad and Tobago. If you recall, when we honored Cliff Alexis back in 2018, the ambassador attended that, and we're hoping to bring him back. It's going to be a grand affair. Everybody on campus is involved. If you haven't received an email from Liam, you will get one very soon, I'm sure. As you can see, we have much to be proud of, much to celebrate. Our vision for the College of Visual and Performing Arts of becoming a national model for educating the next generation of artists, scholars, and teachers of art, giving stage to visions, voices, bodies, and imaginations that have not been seen or heard and it's being realized here in this campus. And I'm honored and proud to serve as dean in pursuit of that mission. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to.
Any questions for our best golfing dean?
Hey, I had played very well this year, actually.
Sure you did. Yeah, probably way better than me.
I don't know about that.
John, Trustee Butler.
I wonder if you can comment a little bit on the evolution of the new theater building and how that's factored into the success of the college and future planning and so forth.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful building. If you haven't been to the refurbished Stevens building, it's just magnificent. And the Black Box Theater is state of the art. And it was really thoughtfully designed to be maximally flexible to provide our students with an unbelievable laboratory. And of course, once the pandemic hit, that really prescribed. We basically had to do everything online for a year and a half. But we're back in action, and I'm happy to say that it's breathtaking. So the accreditors are, we had to postpone our accreditation visit for the School of Theater and Dance, but we recently had a consultant come by, and he was floored by the beauty of the spaces, but also the flexibility and the capacity of our facilities. For example, our scene shop is one of the best in the region, if not the best in the region. And so it gives our students really cutting edge and top of the line experience in terms of design and technical abilities. So that's a great opportunity. And I just want to add, one of the things it has done is it's created a stronger link with Chicago Public Schools. So I'll just briefly say, the design tech area in the theater world is overwhelmingly white and male. We have discussed with CPS of creating a 3+3 program, still in the very early stages, where someone would come 3 years in our BA program in theater with a preferential admission to our MFA program in design and tech. We believe that we can literally change the face of the profession through programs like this. And I'm talking to Julia DeBentoncourt, who's the Director of Art Education at CPS, and connecting with Hope Chicago to fund these kind of things. And I think that's certainly something that Catherine and I have talked about as our capital campaign. We think that art education should be free for everyone who wants to study to be an artist. I think it's one of the greatest investments you can make. The return is over the long period. But when you look at the works of Shakespeare or Van Gogh or Frida Kahlo, you know that it resounds for the centuries, not just in the immediate moment. And so that's a long way of getting to, but the Stevens Building is a great little jewel, and we think it can, we're looking forward to seeing how it maximizes those opportunities. Thank you for your question.
What happened to the snowflake?
Well, it's folded up, and I think it's in. It's being preserved in the School of Art and Design, and we can unfurl it anytime you want.
Okay.
You know, actually, what we should do is maybe next year at homecoming is bring it out onto the field.
Yeah. Hey, it's a Guinness Book of World Records.
That's right.
Why not?
We should bring it out and show it off every now and then, as long as the weather permits.
Just to tell a quick story to the comment that you made, and it reminded me of it when you said, when art is done well, everybody wins, right? And so years ago, myself and Stacy hosted, when we lived in California, we hosted an NIU alumni event at our home, fundraising event. And they brought out members of the NIU Jazz Orchestra to play at the event. And they came out a couple of days early, and so we hosted them at a very well-known restaurant in the Bay Area. I'm trying to remember the director's name, Ron?
Carter.
Carter. So Ron Carter's there with, there was probably a half a dozen members of the jazz orchestra that he brought out. At the restaurant that night is a very famous, well-known jazz orchestra from the Bay Area in San Francisco playing. Of course, Ron knows members of them, right? It's a very close-knit community. So Ron goes up to them and says, hey, when you take a break, I've got, you know, a half a dozen of my students here. Would you mind if we play? And they're like, sure, right? Well, what we didn't know is that Ron had stashed their instruments in the back of the van, so they all had their instruments. And I'm not ad-libbing this one iota, right? So the kids were so good, And this was a restaurant where the jazz band played, but nobody danced. They all just ate. It was very, very expensive meals that they were eating, so they took advantage of it. And when the kids began playing, they were so good. Everybody left their meals and in the restaurant and began dancing. And the jazz band that was there paid to play, they come back and now they start playing with our jazz orchestra. So now you've got about a 10 or 11 or 12 piece jazz group up there playing. And it was an amazing night. The place was full. Folks were hearing about this going on off the street. They were coming into the restaurant to dance and drink and so forth. And they eventually had to close the place down because of fire laws. And it was an amazing night. And, I mean, we, for a long period of time, we have had a tremendous jazz orchestra.
Oh, yes.
And so kudos to you for not only continuing the tradition, compounding on it with the trip to New York City.
We're excited, so. And the entire university has been involved in supporting this kind of activity. A couple of years ago, you might remember, the dance group went to the Washington, D.C. and participated in the National Dance Festival. This is a similar endeavor to that, but it's all credit to Reggie Thomas and the amazing group of jazz musicians we have. Jeff Bradfield, Rodrigo Villanueva, just person after person is just tremendous assets. So it's nothing like it. Yeah. Right here in DeKalb, pretty cool.
Yep.
Okay. Yes?
Tell me the outcomes that you're seeing from the 16-19 performance. Because that was intended to have discussion and
ongoing. Right. Well, you know, it was tied to the Hannah Nicole Jones presentation, and Ted Williams III was a moderator following that. And I think follow-up would be really good. I think the immediate impact was tremendous. It woke people up. It showed, and the play itself, the performance itself, articulated the journey of the 1619 journey in a way that I thought brought it very personal, because a lot of it had to do with Ted's personal journey as well. And I think it really resonated, at least that's what I saw in the audience at the time. But what I think we must absolutely do is build on those things. It can't just be a one and done. We have to see, how do we continue these kind of engagements? One of the things that we're trying to do, and certainly we're doing it in the college, is telling community stories. I think one of the shifts in conservatory training is away from sort of the classic, traditional kinds of forms. Mozart, Beethoven, they're all fine. They're gonna be okay. But we need to start doing a much better job of telling the stories of the community, by the community, for the community, of the community. And the professional artists engaged in those kind of discussions. So I think that's what 1619 spoke to me and to some of our students, I think. Wow, my story can be up there too. I can find the means to express it through my talents, whatever they may be. It might include references to the great literature of music or theater or whatever, but visual design. But it breaks forward with new expressions. What I tell students all the time is, you're the only one who can tell the story that you have inside. And the means by which you tell it is our job to bring that out. Only person in all of the universe ever who has that information, the truth of what you can bring forward. Its uniqueness is so powerful. And we can do a better job, and I think 1619 explains that, how we can make those stories, bring them forward, lift them up, and then someone else, as Pablo Neruda says in his poem, The Poet's Obligation, that they too can see that they're part of this world.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that Dr. Jill Walden has a comment on that as well. So Bernice?
Thank you. So I agree with Dean Castle. I just also wanted to add, in terms of impact, one of the reasons why it was so important to partner with Visual and Performing Arts on this project was because we have, one, had a strong partnership with them in terms of sharing stories, but it was absolutely part of our Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Center programming, which does absolutely what Dean Castle said, and that is sharing the stories that are not often shared. And so what we found from the community was that they absolutely want us to do more programming like that and what they saw in 1619. We are developing a video that has interviews of the community members that attended, as well as Ted Williams and some of the cast members, to talk about what the 1619 project meant to them. So we hopefully we can share that with you as well. I want to thank our team, Monique and Bernudi and her team, working with Visual and Performing Arts and OERD, Jennifer Gross, in really bringing this together. It was definitely a community event that looked at not only our on-campus sense of narrative telling and storytelling, but also our community. So we look forward to doing more like that, and it absolutely also connected with our lecture with Nicole Hannah-Jones. So this was definitely a heavy lift from all parties on campus, and we look forward to doing more.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dean Castle. So we'll now move to Chair's Report number 105. Item 9A is the closed session minutes review and release. May I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Gail.
We have a motion and we have a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call vote?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watzwitz?
Yes. And just one clarification on that, the board has elected to not release those. So that's what's written in here, and that's what we're voting on. So I know everybody knew that already, but I just wanted to make that clear to the public. So, and I vote yes, and therefore the motion carries. Item 9B in the chair's report is the second and final reading of amendments to the Board of Trustees bylaws. The proposal before the board was passed out at the RILA committee back on August 18, and the Board of Trustees reviewed this amendment proposal under the first reading at the September 15th regular meeting of the board. Today, we are being asked to conduct a final review and approval of these new amendments to the Board of Trustees regulations. Please note that under the current version of the bylaws, amendments to the bylaws must be approved by 6 affirmative votes of the members of the full board. So with that said, may I hear a motion to approve?
So moved, Marcino.
Second, Butler.
A motion, and we have a second. And is there any discussion? And again, I'd just like to make note here that there's been an enormous amount of work that's been put together by our legal team advising us as a board individually, staying in compliance with the Open Meetings Act. And then we're going through trying to update things that have been there since 1996 and even before the Open Meetings Act. So a lot of things are being put up to date. And again, I really thank Trustee Athus and Trustee Butler for the work that you have done on this.
Yes.
And also Greg Brady and Brian and everybody that's been involved here. And Samantha, oh my God, yes, Samantha. Is she here? Oh, she has finals. Those are more important, I guess. So anyway, any other discussion on this? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll call?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard? Board Chair Eric Watzowitz.
I will be the seventh and say yes. So the motion carries, and thank you very much for your work on that. Receiving the required 6 affirmative votes, the board has approved of the amendments to the Board of Trustees regulations as outlined in the item. The recording secretary shall now update the official version of the Board of Trustees bylaws on the NIU website to incorporate these changes. Now to the point of other matters, and are there any other matters requiring the attention of the board today? Yes, Trustee Butler.
My apologies for not saying this earlier, but thank you also for raising this as an issue and making certain that we conducted the bylaws review, because it really came from you in the original.
It really came from
I was so hypnotized by all the accolades that I had forgotten I wanted to mention that. Thank you.
It was actually Trustee Barsima that got us rolling in the right direction.
That was how long this has been going on.
Yes, yes, yes.
Exactly.
So, thank you also, Dennis. Thank you.
Yeah. And he was the one that said, hey, I got a little job for you to do. Dennis. And this did take a while. So are there any other matters that we should bring to our attention today? Hearing none, the next regularly scheduled meeting of the full Board of Trustees is March 23, 2023 at 9 a.m. The board needs to go into closed session. We do not plan to take up any new business following the closed session. May I have a motion to close the public meeting to conduct a closed session to discuss the following subjects authorized by the Illinois Open Meetings Act. Closed session minutes matters as generally described under Section 2C21 of the Open Meetings Act. Collective bargaining matters as generally described under Section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act. Litigation and risk management matters as generally described under Sections 2C11 and 12 of the Open Meetings Act. Real estate matters as generally described under Section 2C5 and 6 of the Open Meetings Act. Personnel matters as generally described under Sections 2C1, 2, 3, and 21 of the Open Meetings Act. Do I hear a motion? We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second, Moore.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call a roll call vote to close the meeting?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watsowitz?
Yes, the public meeting is now closed. Okay, I'd like to reopen our meeting. Do I hear a motion to adjourn our public meeting?
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Doyle, would you please call the roll?
Vice Chair Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales? Trustee Veronica Herrero? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Board Chair Eric Watsowitz?
Yes. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Happy holidays to everybody.
Happy